The March 13th meeting of Education Policy Reform will come to order. The legislative assistant will note the roll. And members, just to alert you to, let's do the minutes first. Representative Crawford, have you looked over the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Representative Crawford moves the minutes of March 8th. Are there any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes for March 8 are adopted. So, members, today, first we're going to deal with a bill that's been returned to us, the Depke bill. And then it's going to be the Erickson day in the chair. And, members, I would like to have others run the meeting other than my vice chair so that you have some experience. And so if it's okay, Representative O'Driscoll, I'd like you to be in the chair for 2310. Representative Moran, would you be in the chair for 1917?
Yes.
Thank you. And Representative Woodard, if he would show up, I would ask him to be in the chair for 1656. So with that, let's proceed to deal with the Depke bill. Representative Depke, your motion, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I recommended that House File 2596 pass out of this committee again and be moved to the General Register.
Representative Depke moves that House File 2596 that was sent to another committee, the K-12 Finance Committee, and they didn't need to see it, and was returned here, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and 2596 has been referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Depke. Representative O'Driscoll. Members, I'd like to move House File 2310, recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Members, this is called a repealing obsolete statutes, and I have provided for you the appendix. So if you look in your folders, along with the bill text is also a list of all of those sections of law that have been chosen to be repealed. This was prepared by the Senate. They've not yet heard this bill. But what I'd like to do is walk you through this repealer and then have the department testify and anyone else who would like to testify in favor or with concerns about repealing some of these provisions. First of all, the bill text. The bill text, Section 1, would be deleting from law a provision that provides for basic skills testing. It is outdated, but you will hear the department raise concerns because we actually have young adults who have not yet passed this test who are in an ABE program and would like to qualify for graduation through this process. So you will hear the department refer to that. So it might be that we will keep present law, or we could move this part of Section 1, Subdivision 1, into session law. We could do one or the other. And then the repealer is Section 2, and in Article 2, conforming amendments, I don't believe there are any concerns with the deletion of the exception of 122A, 6A, Subdivision 6 that's noted on page 4 in line 32. So with that said, members, let me walk you through the appendix. 128.28 is school board duties. It is archaic language or obsolete language. 120B.019 is the last of the profile of learning. that's still in statute, and I think it would be good to remove that. 120B.13 is a section of advanced placement and international baccalaureate that no longer applies. 120B.31, we closed the Office of Independent Educational Accountability in 2005, so I think it's appropriate that that be removed from statute. 128.60, definitions of a school site mediation board and a school-based ombudsperson, and the department will testify to some extent on that section, as well as 121A.62, the school site mediation board, and 121A.63, the ombudsperson service. 122A.18, board to issue licenses, is no longer applicable, so that could be repealed. 122A.68, the teaching residency program, after much discussion with Louise Sundin and others, including the Board of Teaching, it is possible that we will not repeal that today, even though the Bush Foundation, in their work, probably could provide an avenue for a teaching residency program. It is probably best that we keep that for now and repeal it at a later time if it is not applicable in the next biennium. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to have testifiers come forward and address some of these repealers. And I believe the department probably would like to come first.
Perhaps before we do that, just if there's any member questions at this point for clarification. Any questions by members? If not, we'll proceed with the testifiers. Mr. McHenry, welcome to the committee this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Thanks for allowing me to testify here. Just want to thank Chair Erickson for bringing forward this bill. Obviously, it's trying to clean up some language. We do support some of the language in here. However, we do have, I don't want to say concerns, but there were some that we might just wanted to raise a couple issues with. Obviously, Article 1, as Chair Erickson already mentioned, we would ask that you would consider removing this from the bill. We have a bill that's introduced, Representative Mariani, that addresses this issue. Right now, there are students who, for whatever reasons, have not finished high school and have not finished or have not had a chance to pass the basic skills test. Obviously, this is a test that is no longer going to be administered, and they will not have a pathway to graduation if we repeal this. The language that we have in our other bill, or in the other bill that may come up next week, it allows for the students that have completed school but have not yet passed this basic skills test that they would be under the same regulations as students now under the grad test. So that would be an option. Yesterday when we discussed this with the chair, we thought it applied to maybe 20 students, but we have heard through ABE that it could be upwards of 250 students, and we just felt that this was that we wanted to make sure that there still was a pathway to graduation for those students who have yet to complete high school. As far as some other points in the bill, there's an Office of Educational Accountability, 120B.31, Subdivision 3. We think this provides right now. This office isn't funded. We believe that this would provide some, if it is funded properly, can provide some oversight through our new accountability system from an outside perspective. Obviously, it isn't funded, so therefore, it is not in effect. But we would just raise the issue that this would be a good office for funding to oversee our accountability system and testing, among other things. 121A.62 and 63 It's dealing with site mediation and the ombudsman services. This is something that is permissive language. It's not something that is set up right now in districts. Our view is that it's something that if a district was going to move forward to have an ombudsman service or for site mediation, that this puts a permissive language in place for districts to follow. And we wanted to raise those issues. The other thing, and this was brought to my attention, I apologize, I hadn't had a chance to speak to Representative Erickson about this regarding 120B.13. Originally, when we saw this, we thought it was repealing Subdivision 1, not Paragraph B, which Subdivision 1 is a is kind of a mission statement, I guess you could say.
It's the purpose statement, yes.
But Paragraph B, I think we wanted to do a little bit more work to see if that was still necessary or not. And this was just raised to our attention as far as what kind of teacher training happens for APIB. But it's something we definitely we can provide some further information after we do a little bit more digging for you all.
Thank
questions
you, Mr.
from
McHenry.
Mr. McHenry this morning? If not,
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from others in the audience.
Certainly.
Perhaps the School Boards Association could lend some insight as to whether or not the School Site Mediation Board and the Ombudsperson Service have been actively used. I found that it had been at least 2 decades since any of that had been used.
Looks like there may be a few people making their way down who would like to testify.
Or actually, Mr. Chair, if they have comments on any of the repealers, we welcome that.
Thank you. Welcome.
We're
to the
first
committee.
Out of the chute, Mr. Chair, so yes. The Senate has not heard this bill yet.
Welcome to the committee. If you would state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwind with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And to our knowledge, this is not an issue of removing. I mean, this is, I think that the districts have not alerted me that this is would be a serious issue if it was removed from statute. And so we don't have any concerns with removal of these provisions. And so I know this thing will probably be moving forward. And if we get any red alerts from our members that this is an issue for us, we'll certainly talk to the author about that.
Excellent.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm here on Literacy Action Minnesota, and we represent ABE programs across the state. And I apologize to the author on this because this was just brought to our attention from some of the ABE division of the department. And actually, Mr. McHenry talked about this bill because it's contrary to the Mariani provision in his bill that I believe by this repealer, as Mr. McHenry said, that this would prevent some of the students that are going through ABE programs for adult diploma to have a pathway for graduation. So we would like to look at the language that's in Representative Mariani's to address that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe Representative Erickson said she was open to that. She doesn't want to disadvantage anyone by stricken this language. Others wishing to testify?
So, Mr. Chair, I think with that, in Article 1, Section 1, Subdivision 1, I would move to reinstate the stricken language starting on line 1.22 and continuing to line 2.4.
There is an oral amendment to include again on House File 2310, lines 122 through 2.4. Any discussion? Ms. Larson, do you have any comments for us on that this morning?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. What Representative Erickson is proposing is to essentially undo the one change in the section, and that would leave the section as is. Consequently, we don't need to have it in the bill because it would be, therefore, untouched. So we would simply need to delete the section from the bill.
So, Mr. Chair, I will amend my motion to delete the section.
Article 1?
Yes.
Right. Motion has been amended to delete Article 1, Section 1
right.
of the bill. Any other discussion to the matter? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then in the in Section 2, the repealer, and I do not see Louise Sundin in the audience, but I think she is hoping that we would delete 122A.18 subdivision 9. And that, members, was dealing with the teaching residency program, which I believe Minneapolis Public Schools uses. I don't know if they've used it in the last year or so, but in a discussion with Karen Ballmer from the Board of Teaching, it seems that if it's available, it's probably better to keep it than to repeal it. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move that deletion from the repealer section.
Right, another author's oral amendment this morning on Section 2 of Article 1, State Statute Section 122A.18 Subdivision 9 to be stricken from the bill. Ms. Larson, are we have we identified the right section so that we don't have any technical issues? Okay, thank you. Any discussion on the oral amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think with that, I would suggest that we continue to leave the 120B.13 Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate Programs in place, and perhaps the department can do their research before this is heard in the Senate. The same would be true of the mediation boards. As long as the School Boards Association, who I think has constant contact with their members, doesn't see any problems, I would suggest that we leave those as repealers as stated in Section 2, unless members have other thoughts. Oh, excuse me. My CA is pointing out that I might have misspoken. 122A.68. I'm not sure why I said 122A.18 subdivision 9. What was that?
So we should be looking at 122.
The last item in the repealer list.
But just for clarification, we
not the board to issue licenses. I'm sorry, I misspoke. So I want to recall my my motion.
So we'd like to amend back in 122A.18.
Yes. Withdraw my previous oral amendment and allow that we delete 122A.68. That's the teaching residency program. Thank you.
Great. The author has asked that we reinstate 122A.1A subdivision 9 on an oral amendment and in its place take section 122A.68 and delete that.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
So, Mr. Chair, with that, I could stand for some questions. If there are any, otherwise, I would renew my motion.
So the bill is now in the form that the author likes and wishes it to be voted on. Other questions from Representative Greiland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't see any reason not to vote for this, being that we're not funding some of these things, but I just can't let it go by that I thought the Profile of Learning and the Office of Educational Accountability were two of the better things we did here at the legislature. So I'm sorry that they are not funded and now even the last vestiges of their names are being removed from statute. Thank you.
Representative Grinding, we will have a moment of silence.
Okay.
Any other questions from committee members? Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I just want to echo some of what Representative Grinding just shared, and I would encourage the chair to, as the bill moves along, to think again about the Office of Educational Accountability, the whole idea of that entity. And I carried a bill a couple of years ago to try to revive that, was to provide both the legislature and the executive branch an objective, research-based perspective on K-12 education policy. And it also served a bit as a as sort of a watchdog over the department. I think I suspect that's part of the reason why it, you know, it quickly demised, that it was looking over the shoulders of the Department of Education. And from an objective, nonpartisan, research-based perspective, offering advice and comment on some of the decisions that the department was making, and in many cases affirming some of the decisions as well. So at any rate, I would encourage the chair and the members, as this bill moves along, if it does, to rethink that position. I think this is one of those entities at some point we're going to want to recreate. We used to have a state board of education in this state. Most states have them, and we don't even have that. And I think the legislature is a wise and good entity. Obviously, I serve in it, and the executive branch, not so much. Nonetheless, I think having a third party, you know, objective, research-based, providing some good advice and watchdog activities is a good thing for our state.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify or share comments? If not, Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Mariani that it certainly served a good purpose, but, you know, it was funded by the Board of Regents of the U of M, and when they discontinued the funding in 2005, then it became dormant, and you know, I don't have a problem with keeping it in statute if we want to resurrect it someday. So I think, you know, I'll have a conversation with the Board of Regents and see if they'd like to keep this, and I can send the word to the Senate that, you know, let's hang on to this. But I think those who put together this proposal were looking for those statutes that were obsolete, that hadn't been used for several years, and that was why we ended up with these provisions in place. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 2310, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The next bill is House File 1917. It is a technical
Representative Erickson,
change.
If you don't mind, we're going to switch chairs on this.
Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
At this time,
I'm
I'll advocate to
Moran.
Representative
yes,
Moran.
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. And members, on Thursday, we'll do the same. Some of you will. Not because I'm going to be in this hot seat, but because I would like our last official meeting to have a variety of chairs and want many of you to have the experience. So. Welcome, Representative Moran. Good to have you.
Welcome. Go ahead, Representative Erickson.
Representative Moran and members, I'd like to move 1917, a technical piece of legislation, to be before the committee, recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And Madam Chair, I do have an oral amendment.
Okay, can you go forward?
So, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer on line 1.12 to delete Columbus Day, comma. And, Madam Chair, that was an oversight on my part. The sentence that we deleted had the correct information in it, and I did not proof this carefully enough when it came back to me, and so it's my mistake to leave Columbus Day in. So I want to move that oral amendment and delete Columbus Day, comma.
Okay. We have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erickson, I strongly endorse deleting Columbus Day. My granddaughter called me a couple of weeks ago, and she said, I said, what are you learning in school? And she said she was learning that the Pilgrims caused disease and killed people. That was Washington, D.C. schools. Figured she was reading the People's History book. Yeah.
Okay, all in favor of the oral amendment? Please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carried.
So, Madam Chair, with that, unless there are some questions about this technical change, actually, members, it came to my attention when I was visiting with a Princeton High School student last summer who was urging me to mandate a Veterans Day celebration. And I told her that was a little touchy subject here, but I knew we had in statute a provision that would allow for at least 1 hour of a school day to be devoted to a patriotic observance of that day, and that she should continue to work with our local school officials in getting Veterans Day to be observed at the high school. So when she and I sat down to look at 128.42, she asked, Mrs. Erickson, what does this mean? And so we decided that it could use some updating as far as sentence construction, and that's why it's before us. And I apologize again for missing the deletion of Columbus Day in this change, because that was not the intention in the original legislation, and I did not intend to change that intention. So, Madam Chair, that's how this came about, and I guess with that said, I'll renew my motion that 1917, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in favor of this bill? In opposition? Is there any questions from the committee? Oh, wonderful. So we have Representative Erickson. Would you like to renew your motion?
Sure, I'll renew my motion that 1917 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Love that.
Thank you, Representative Moran.
Thank you.
Oops. Madam Chair, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that said, I'd like to move Senate File 1656, recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. This, members, is the recommendation that before state standards are placed into action in our schools, that they receive legislative approval. And this is the Senate file. It has already come from the Senate, as you could tell. And it reads, the commissioner must revise and align the state academic standards and graduation requirements consistent with the review cycle established in the subdivision and the requirements of Chapter 14, but may proceed to finally adopt, revise, and align standards and graduation requirements in rule only after legislation is enacted directing the commissioner to adopt the academic standards or graduation requirements in rule. And, Mr. Chair, I do know that there are some testifiers from the department.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, are there anybody who would like to testify in support of this bill? Okay. How about in opposition? I see Mr. McHenry running down the stairs. Go ahead, Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. We are, from the department's perspective, we are opposed to this legislation. The process that was put in place, maybe the process that was put in place to kind of avoid the or to avoid the political process to deal with adopting standards. This process was put in place. Has been successful for several standard or several adoptions of updating standards. It is something that requires a significant amount of public input. It requires a significant amount of experts from a wide range. There's higher ed, there's K-12, there's business input, and it involves the public process before, during, and also through the rulemaking process, which will still continue after this. But what we wanted to do was bring our Director of Academic Standards, Beth Owney, up and she could go through our timeline of how these standards are adopted and what is going to happen as our social studies standards enter the rulemaking process. That would just provide just kind of an overview of how the standards are adopted, and we think that might be helpful for the committee.
Before we do that, Mr. McHenry, Representative Norton, do you have a question for Mr. McHenry?
No, Mr. Chair. If I could just wait and defer till after the discussion.
We'll defer that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We did want Beth Bonnie to come and update us on the social studies standards, which she has been working very hard on.
Okay, please state your name for the record.
Good morning. I'm Beth Auney. I'm Director of Academic Standards and Instructional Effectiveness at the Department of Education.
Go ahead.
I'm very pleased to share the proposed Minnesota K-12 Academic Standards and Social Studies with you. The newly revised standards are the result of a year-long process that began under Commissioner Segrin's administration and continued under Commissioner Casales's administration. The standards were revised by a 45-member committee that represented parents, business, K-12, post-secondary education, K-12 administrators, and other stakeholders. The committee membership represented the span of K-12 grade levels and the four required social studies areas of history, geography, economics, and civics and government. Many of the teachers on the committee have taught multiple subjects and grades and have won state and national awards for their teaching. The standards were reviewed by an unprecedented number of expert reviewers. Typically, in our standards review process, we have anywhere from 3 to 6 expert reviewers. In the case of social studies standards, we worked with over 13 nationally recognized expert reviewers. These reviewers provided expert guidance to the committee. Additionally, we employed the help of a number of consultants who helped guide the group on specific issues. The process also included 2 public review and comment periods to ensure that the committee's revisions were addressing what the public perceived to be the most important issues. It's important to know that the committee needed to address a number of very difficult challenges when they revised the social studies standards. One challenge that was foremost in everyone's mind was that they needed to create standards that address college and career readiness. So they understood that students needed to master a certain body of knowledge and that students need deep levels of understanding of this knowledge in order to make sense of their world. But in addition to mastering that body of knowledge, students also must be able to apply their understanding to complex situations and contexts, some of which are yet to be envisioned. To prepare for these future challenges, the standards also require students to think critically about important issues and communicate their findings, and to engage in the processes of problem-solving and discipline-based inquiry. These 4 major processes weave throughout the proposed standards. A second challenge was to create grade-level specific benchmarks in grades K through 8 as required by law. This is a big change from the 2004 social studies standards when the benchmarks were in grade bands. A third challenge was to create fewer standards and benchmarks overall, so that teachers would have adequate time to focus deeply on what is most important for students to know and be able to do, and so that students could develop deep levels of understanding. Another challenge was for the committee to write standards that were of the right grain size. And this is a term we use to refer to standards and benchmarks being of a consistent size so that they're not too big, so that they're not vague, and don't identify the knowledge and skills that are needed, but they're not so narrow as to prevent a variety of curriculum approaches. So finding that right balance is a very, very difficult thing, which I think the committee really did quite well. There are a number of other challenges, such as having to articulate a very smooth progression of knowledge and skills from one grade level to the next, so that student knowledge could be increasingly complex and sophisticated as we move up through the grade levels. Another concern that we heard a lot about from public input was that there should be more of a global focus on the standards. In this era of globalization, students need to understand a variety of different cultures and regions of the world. And accompanying that, there was, I would say, an equal concern with the so-called middle school issues. How do we write standards and benchmarks that are developmentally appropriate for students as they're moving through this very difficult age level? How do we make sure that their context continually expands to include this global focus that was of great concern? And how do we get through the huge breadth of content that is in these five subject areas of U.S. history, world history, geography, civics, and economics? How do you do all that with schools that are increasingly devoting less rather than more time to the study of social studies? So all of these concerns were important issues addressed by our Social Studies Standards Committee. In order to address those challenges, the committee decided to structure the standards to follow this kind of K-12 sequence. In the primary grades, there will be equal attention devoted to the five disciplines. So in K through 3, students will learn about economics, U.S. and world history, and the other disciplines in approximately equal amounts of time. So we call that focus foundations of the social studies. That's a change from the 2004 standards in that there's increased attention to civics and economics. One of the big criticisms we heard about the 2004 standards was there simply was not enough understanding of economic principles and skills to prepare students for life in the 21st century. So we start that at the kindergarten level. In grades 4 and 5, students learn about the geography of North America. In grade 4, grade 5, they learn about the history of North America up to 1800. This prepares them then to differentiate out into a more discipline-based focus in the middle school grades of 6, 7, and 8. In grade 6, they approach Minnesota Studies, and it's called Minnesota Studies instead of Minnesota History, because the committee wanted to convey the fact that students will be learning about Minnesota in the context of something larger, in this case, United States history, as well as other subjects that contribute to their understanding. So as they learn economics in Minnesota Studies, they're learning about the fur traders and how the economics of fur trading affected Minnesotans. Always, they're learning about something in the context of something larger. In grade 7, they move from Minnesota Studies to U.S. Studies. This is a study of United States history from 1800 to the present. Again, with the other social studies disciplines, geography, economics, civics, and government, contributing to that understanding of U.S. history. In grade 8, now they've moved from Minnesota Studies to U.S. Studies to the larger global studies. And this is really an innovation that we see in the new standards that helps students to achieve interdisciplinary understanding of the history, geography, principles of civics and government that comprise our modern global world. In global studies in grade 8, the kind of world history that is studied is focused on contemporary world history, because that is where a lot of public comment came into us, saying that to really understand contemporary world geography and the major regions of the world, you need to accompany that with a focus on contemporary world history, and that students often are lacking that. In grades 9 through 12, the students again branch out into more of a discipline-based inquiry in each of the five disciplines. And the standards and benchmarks created at the high school level nicely round out that 3.5 credits worth of social studies that they have to earn as a condition for graduation. There's a lot more I could share with you about the process and what the standards themselves actually look like, but I'll leave that to you for questions. The next thing in terms of the timeline is that we now enter into rulemaking at a fast and furious pace, and that begins with the development of the Statement of Need and Reasonableness, the SONAR. And we hope to be finished with that sometime during this summer. We are looking then at getting approval to move forward with rulemaking from the governor's office and getting an approved draft of the standards back from the reviser sometime in the spring and summer, moving ahead to publish the dual notice that will tell people that we intend to go ahead with adoption of the standards rules unless there are enough requests to have a hearing. If the rulemaking coordinator at the department receives 25 or more requests for a hearing, then we'll have a hearing, and that probably would happen around September. So that's the timeline as we know it today. And with that, I will stop and see if you have any questions.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me right now, as we proceed without this law, is there a what happens if, is it during the rulemaking process, perhaps, that the legislature, if it sees something that, as it looks at the rules that are made public, if it sees something that is concerning, can they weigh in, like the public in general, during that process? And is it during rulemaking that that happens, or could you clarify for me the what if we do have a concern?
Ms. Nowlin, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, the legislature, like anyone else, is invited to submit comment anytime during the standards development process, the public comment periods that we've already had, or now. So at any time, you can submit a written recommendation or suggestion, and I would advise that you send that to me at the department for me to share with the co-chairs of the standards committee.
And Representative Norton.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just have a couple, another question and a point. So are there any legislators at all involved through the process as it currently stands on that 45-member panel that you're aware of, or could they be as a member?
Ms. Dowd.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there are no legislators who are on the actual committee. I don't believe there's ever been a legislator on any of our standards committees. I know the meeting schedule alone would prevent that kind of involvement. But certainly there are other ways to be involved.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I could continue. And I'm not sure that it's appropriate that we are on, because when we're on as an individual, it is as an individual, and it's just one person's opinion. We don't speak for the body. So I just wanted to know that. One of the things I know from my own community is that the standards review cycle has been a frustration for teachers, frankly, because every time we think we know what we're doing, the cycle starts and it changes again. And so I think from their perspective, at least those that have talked to me, they like the idea of a predictability, and I'm a little nervous that what we're considering here today would disrupt a predictability that has been worked on over several years, that suddenly we could change something that folks, you know, have been working on for several years and think might be happening. So I do have some concerns with that, and I also thought I would put a plug in after Representative Mariani's comments a moment ago about a Board of Education. There is a bill now filed
if the chair is interested in hearing it, to reinstate, and I believe the department would have to fund that themselves, so no funding is necessary, so it certainly could come through the policy committee, to reinstate a Board of Education to take out the possibility of political whims and waves micromanaging education, which on occasion happens up here at the Capitol. So I just thought I would put a plug in for that while I had the mic.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And no need to run down here, Mr. McHenry. We won't discuss the funding of the department this morning. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Norton. I actually feel two ways about this because, you know, most folks who have served with me know that I have a, you know, I jealously guard the authority and responsibility of the legislative branch in regards to establishing public policy. But also as a member of the legislature, I know the mischief that can often happen here. I don't know what happened out in Arizona. I don't know if it's on point. I think that was an administrative decision that Arizona made within the last year where they essentially made it illegal to teach anything about Mexican-American history and identity in a state with one-third Mexican-Americans. It's beyond me. But if that's perhaps the worst example, I mean, that's the kind of thing I think we want to avoid. I suspect that happened at least partly due to the political angst that state is going through as it struggles with immigration issues. And I think that's precisely the kind of place that we don't want education or our standards, our academic standards development to rest on. We want it to rest on, I think, the kind of vetting that you described, Ms. Ani, where you've got a committee, you got experts, you have targeted groups that are pretty, you know, diverse, including representatives from the business community. You've got teachers, and then you've got the rulemaking process itself, which, you know, opens it up, to the public. I think that Representative Norton's questions were kind of along my interest, which is, nonetheless, at some point, there ought to be some kind of active, meaningful engagement with legislators so we can avoid, the worst-case scenario, which is after the executive branch has gone through all this work, then the legislature says, we don't like that. We're just going to totally undo it. And, of course, we'll do that in a 3 or 4 month period of time here while we're trying to do lots of other things. So we're not going to do it as carefully, I think, as the department does. So I think trying to be creative about finding a way for legislators to be involved would be a really good thing, it seems to me. But my question is, so what happens, and this goes to the predictability issue that I think Representative Norton puts on the table, which is important. What happens if the legislature doesn't enact? What happens if the legislature does interimpose itself? What is the department still bound by the revision cycles and statute? I mean, do we create kind of a no man's land here of how to move forward at that point?
Ms. Down.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is kind of unknown territory, but the things that we do know are that in law we're required to put the standards through rulemaking. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself is a very complicated process that typically takes 11 months to a year and a half. Also in law, though, is the requirement that standards be implemented 2 years after they're developed. So if the standards have to be implemented in 2 years and rulemaking happens and there's legislative process that may delay that rulemaking for an unknown amount of time, you introduce a whole new level of uncertainty into the process for schools. And this has big fiscal implications because school districts often set their curriculum purchases on a cycle that corresponds to the 9-year revision cycle that's in law for revising the standards. So I can envision that what would happen is the standards committee would send its draft to the commissioner. The commissioner would approve the draft or approve it with changes, but at some point she approves the draft, and then the legislature reviews it and perhaps does the extreme of saying start all over again, we don't like these standards, or does the minimum and says we agree with this, go forward, or says something in between, change this word or change that phrase. Social studies standards in particular are highly controversial standards for most states, and we try very hard to shield the development of the standards from extremes in political processes. So I think this would potentially reinduce some of those negative effects.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Saudi, I know this is not your area, but it seems to me there's another issue that that needs to be addressed relative to this, which is the revision of our assessment systems. We went through that struggle, as you know, Madam Chair, with the movement to the MCA3s, particularly in math. I remember Dirk Mattson, Dr. Mattson was no longer with the department, you know, would counsel us, I think, you know, quite wisely that to really think carefully about major interposition, and he was directing that at me at times, interjection in terms of the processes here because of the incredible lead time that one has to have relative to the development of those tests. It's not like you can develop these tests overnight. And you know, delays there can create all sorts of not only technical problems, but actually incur some costs to the state. I don't know if you wish to comment on that or not.
Ms. Downing?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I agree with that concern. In Minnesota law, of course, there's a statute that prevents the commissioner from developing a statewide assessment in social studies. So we don't have that same level of concern as we would in, say, English language arts or science. Or mathematics. However, school districts are bound to make sure that all students satisfactorily complete the standards and all benchmarks, and they're required to assess their achievement of those benchmarks. So whether or not a state test is involved, that still introduces a whole level of uncertainty for school districts as they plan their curriculum and assessment systems.
And Mr. Chair, just a final comment. As I read the language here, a point well taken, but as I read the language here, it would seem to apply to every standard and assessment. So in the case of our high stakes assessments, I think now this introduces a whole new level of conversation here relative to the statewide assessments and the expenses related to that. So I would urge extreme caution here. We may be creating a bigger problem for ourselves than whatever problem it is that we're trying to solve at this point.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would agree with that. In Minnesota, we have a rather unique situation that the K-12 academic standards are required to go through the intensive rulemaking process. Most states don't have such a provision, and then, of course, this would add another layer to that with the legislative process as well.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with Representative Norton's comments about the State Board of Education, and like Representative Mariani, I'm always of more than one mind when we come to these kind of issues. But my general philosophy of rulemaking is that we should not have all kinds of things that always have to be done. I have thought of my philosophy on rulemaking is you do as little as possible with the process, but then if it becomes political or complicated or anything else, then you have process that crescendos with the difficulty of the rule. So this bill goes against my philosophy of rulemaking. It has every single rule that has to do with graduation requirements always having to come to the legislature, always having to get approval. And that's a bad thing when it comes to rulemaking. So I would not support the bill. in its present form. But Chair Erickson, I would encourage you to consider an alternative that I think would accomplish the same purpose but wouldn't hamstring us with having to always go through every single rule, every single line. These are very complicated. We could do nothing but look at this kind of thing if we wanted to saddle ourselves with this job during session. But I would urge you to consider requiring that rules not be adopted unless the legislature is in session and has had a chance to look into things. And because that would go with along with my philosophy of rulemaking, which is if there is a need or interest in the legislature entering in, then we could, but we wouldn't have to do it mindlessly every single time. And so my question then for Ms. Ani is, does that generally happen, that rules are developed of this nature when we're in session, or could they come out any time?
Ms. Ani, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, both. But because the rulemaking process is so lengthy, probability is such that it does occur while the legislature is in session.
Okay. Representative Graham, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Chair Erickson, then I think that would be something I could and would support, is having rules, maybe not all rules, but some threshold of rules of this magnitude, maybe just this kind, not being released for schools to have to follow, except when we're in session. And that gives the legislature the opportunity to enter in. But generally speaking, I think that the rulemaking process does do a better job than the legislature. Even if we didn't have the suggestion that I'm making, the legislature always has the trump card. You know, we can always bring rules in and supersede them with legislation. But I think it would be awkward if they were implemented when we're not in session and then we wanted to do that later. I think that's jerking the districts around too much.
Thank you, Representative Grang, and I was sure you were going to ask about Columbus Day, what that looks like in the social studies. Yeah. Chair Erickson, go ahead.
Well, unless Ms. Ani wants to respond to that.
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Ani.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the reason that I am carrying this legislation is not necessarily because I agree with it, but I want to have a discussion about what I see happening in not only the arena of teaching, but in our classrooms. In the previous go-around, we designed lots of standards. They were very specific, and teachers were overwhelmed with all of that. But they were knowledge-based, and they were skill-based, and that was a plus for the previous, or the social studies standards that are in place now. Now, as I followed this, and I have followed it very closely, now we've swung the other way where we have fewer standards, which is great, but now they're vague, and they get into a lot of higher order thinking, which, as I recall from my days in the classroom, raises a lot of issues, because suddenly the discussion is not knowledge-based or skill-based or whatever the assignment or the extension of learning might be. But now we're getting into discussions that raise lots of personal issues, political issues. So here's what I think should be done. I don't think we should have rulemaking. I think we should have fewer standards set by the state. They should be placed in statute. They should be knowledge-based, skill-based, and then let the locals add on to as they see fit, as they want to expand. Then we get rid of rulemaking. We have just a few standards and benchmarks. We allow our districts to have much more local control. If there has to be testing, the testing is based on those specific state standards, benchmarks actually, and we're done with it. And you know, we're really only involved to the point where we place in statute the standards, and we stop the rulemaking, which is actually just a repeat of all these standards that I'm looking through in social studies and have read for ad nauseum now. And we simplify the process, and I think we return local control. You know, as you know, I taught, and many of you, well, at least Mr. Benson, Representative Benson, in an era when we weren't told by the state what to teach. We didn't have standards sent to us, but we developed really solid curriculum to support our local standards. You know, and we did really, really well. I know Representative Benson taught advanced placement, and there's no other course probably taught in our high schools, for example, that has better knowledge and skill base than advanced placement, whether it's in the areas of English, which was my specialty, or social studies. And you know, I think we're putting a lot of time and energy and certainly a lot of dollars into this whole process. And maybe we're not accomplishing what we really want, because we want well-educated students who know their geography, know and understand their geography, and know and understand economics. And I will say the economics piece in these standards is good. I appreciate that piece. That know and understand American history and know the facts. And to me, the standards here wander a lot. There's historical thinking. Historical thinking can be dangerous. Let's just teach the facts and then give students enough skill level so they can start discerning among the various political ideas, for example, that float around out there that come and go. That we have world history taught so they have a sense of not living just in the United States of America, but in the world. And finally, we have civics taught so that they can be responsible citizens. So the parts of these standards are very good, the five parts. But I just feel that there will be teacher frustration and that there will be an inability for our students to really know what it is that they should know and what can they do to be responsible citizens. And so I wanted to have this discussion. You know, I don't know if this bill is going to go forward, but I think it is time for us to reassess the standards business that we've gotten into and that I think we're frustrating our locals. And I hope, as far as this is concerned, this particular social studies issue, that you all weigh in now and send Ms. Ani your comments after you read through the standards. And that you participate in the public hearing, because I know we will have a public hearing on this issue, because I receive so many concerns about these social studies standards from teachers, from parents, from concerned citizens. In fact, I spent some money out of our budget during the summer, which is probably the only money we've spent out of the budget, to have these professionally reviewed. And so scholars from the University of Minnesota have reviewed them and provided some excellent commentary. Fordham Foundation, one of their employees reviewed them, and we had others. I think we had at least five reviews done, and I can share those with you if you're interested, and in fact, email the link to all of them. But, it has just made me uncomfortable that we're moving in a direction of now having moved from specificity to vagueness, and we're responsible for this. So that's my message to you.
Members, I've got Representative Depke, Mariani, Kath, and Crawford on the list, and I know that there's one more testifier at least that wants to testify. Are any of those questions for Ms. Harney that you want to address, or are these just general questions? Representative Crawford.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Ani, but a while back in your testimony, you said this could have potential for significant fiscal impact.
Yes.
Are you talking about for the school districts or for the department, or who are you referring to there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe I said that it could have potential fiscal impact. However, you're talking about the proposed bill.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, I did say that. It's because the school districts plan their curriculum revision cycles, the curriculum adoption cycles, largely based on the state schedule for review of standards. And the legislature has decided that you have a 9-year revision cycle. So it's 9 years is the space of time between one set of standards and the next. So within that 9-year period, school districts tend to schedule their review and adoption and purchase of curriculum to work with that. So if we had some kind of uncertainty introduced into that system, and districts would not be able to plan when that adoption would occur or to what degree, that's a big concern, to what degree. Because if you have standards that are going to be this way, you know, for say 11 months or so, and then at the 12th month there's chance that it could greatly change, that introduces a lot of uncertainty, and that's where the fiscal implication comes, I think.
Representative Crawford. Okay. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity just to really support somewhat of what Chair Erickson is referring to in the rulemaking process. The other day I handed out in this committee a summary of the rulemaking process, and it clearly states in there that the agency must solicit comments from the public on the subject at least 60 days before publishing this notice. The agency must publish notice of the rules on the state register. It must mail this notice to people who have requested to be notified, and Representative Erickson did suggest that the legislator be involved in this, and make other reasonable efforts to notify people who may be significantly affected by this. The agency must conduct a public hearing. The 25 people that was mentioned earlier is in the law right now. And most agency rules are adopted without a public hearing, but there is the opportunity for that. In addition to that, the executive law judge must determine that the agency has not established need for the reasonableness of the rules. If that happens, the rules are submitted to the legislator, coordinating commission, the LCC, and the House and the Senate Governmental Operations Committee for comments. After seeking these comments, an agency may adopt the rules. So we have a very thorough process to make sure that the legislature is involved, and I think that Representative Erickson, that supports your comments on that. But we have to make sure that we give the public to be involved, and that's also very important. I appreciate Representative Norton's comments as well.
Sonny? All right. I know that Dr. Ephraim would like to testify. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify, either in support of or in opposition to? Okay. Dr. Ephraim? And state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Karen Ephraim. I am here on behalf of Education Liberty Watch, and want to testify in enthusiastic support of this bill. I'm going to focus for a minute, though, not on the social studies standards, but on the Common Core National Standards, which is another big area of concern, and not only in Minnesota, but across the country. And I just want to say that we're grateful to Representative Erickson for sponsoring this bill, and it speaks to the Minnesota legislature's long and proud heritage of bipartisan and ideologically diverse opposition to both federal and executive branch interference in education matters. Representative Greiling and Representative Mariani have done that. Representative Benson and many members on the Republican side. So I want to acknowledge that, especially since Representative Greiling is retiring. It's important that we have that history in this legislature of fidelity to separation of powers doctrine, state sovereignty, local control, and parental rights. The merits of this legislation are many. First of all, legally and constitutionally, it is important after the Profile of Learning debacle, the bureaucracy and unfunded mandates of No Child Left Behind, the current efforts of the Federal Department of Education to require national standards for their version of No Child Left Behind reauthorization, No Child Left Behind waivers and Race to the Top, that and that these efforts are actually, according to legal experts, in violation of three major federal laws, it's very important for the people's representatives to weigh in. And sadly, Indiana and Alabama have voted down measures to withdraw from the Common Core national standards because they were concerned about federal funds and not getting a waiver. And that is not the way that standards should be dealt with. It is a state and a local prerogative, and we are going the wrong way. So it is really important for the legislature to be involved. From a fiduciary and fiscal standpoint, the legislature should also weigh in. Changing standards and associated assessments is an enormously expensive undertaking. National estimates for the implementation of the Common Core standards and the aligned assessments have ranged from $16 to $60 billion across the nation. California has estimated alone that it would cost them $3 billion to do that. And while it wouldn't be near that expensive in Minnesota, again, because of the fiscal issues involved, the legislature should be involved in the standards implementation. And then from the quality perspective, these national standards should not be implemented without greater scrutiny. Before the previous administration, and the criticism here is bipartisan, before the previous administration imposed the English Common Core standards without legislative input by rule, they were quite universally panned by experts across the country. Dr. Sandra Stotsky, who reviewed Minnesota's English standards coming out of the Profile of Learning, refused to validate the Common Core standards when they were developed. And the math standards are even worse, as witnessed by the opposition to them by Minnesota's own experts, such as Dr. Larry Gray, and the fact that not one single national expert will defend them. In Minnesota, we've talked a lot about the social studies standards, but the issue with them, and I could talk a lot of specifics and I won't, but the issue is that the law says they are to be revised. It doesn't say they should be wholesale rewritten. And that is what has happened. And there are still, with the changes, a lot of basic knowledge and skills that are left out. We've talked about economics, but the word free market economics does not exist in those standards. Capitalism is only talked of as a problem, and the 10th Amendment is nowhere mentioned in the civic standards. So, you know, these are basic concepts that people need to understand regardless of your political persuasion, and it is important that the people's representatives weigh in. And the last thing I would say is that although this legislation deals with the K-12 standards, the very same thing is happening on the pre-K level with our State Department of Education and the federal government attempting to impose statewide preschool standards that the legislature never reviewed to force compliance with both Parent Aware and the preschool scholarships and the Race to the Top grants for preschool. Even if these standards were perfectly academic and non-controversial, which they are not, the imposition of one top-down, government-mandated set of standards on all programs, public, private, or religious, who volunteer for this rating system really should not be allowed to stand. So those are our comments, and we do hope that you will support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ephraim. And I've got Mariani, Kath, and Moran. Are we able to let Dr. Ephraim go, or did you? Are those questions related? Okay, thank you, Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. One, as a former history major, I will proudly accept that historical thinking is dangerous, and I think that's the whole point of history. It's one of the reasons I was attracted to that discipline. But, Chair Erickson, actually, thank you for your previous expression. I think that's correct. You know, I think that part of what a chair does, or any legislator for that matter, is to bring forward issues and perhaps solutions that may not be perfect, but at least you have them, you know, the engagement and the conversation that we ought to be having here. And I think that one of the things that your comments kind of evoke for me is a question, sort of a fundamental question, and I think it just deserves to be talked through consistently here. And it goes to this issue of local control, how we define that, something that really speaks to sort of a statewide Minnesota community guidance effort, which is perhaps another way to describe the department's engagement, you know, through this process, by virtue of engaging many, many different stakeholders throughout the state. And it seems to me what's important about making decisions about where the sort of ultimate decisions, the ultimate design lies for what ought to be in our standards, that part of what guides that, I think, is real practical answer to the question of are we producing the kind of educated future citizenry that really matches with where both our opportunities and our challenges lie, not only as local communities, but as a state and, frankly, as a nation. And, you know, we all know that, you know, the global economies are rapidly morphing and changing and evolving into ones that require all sorts of new skills that, frankly, I wasn't taught when I was younger. A lot of those are related to new technologies that didn't exist at that time, but that technology also drives a whole new way of interacting with knowledge and interacting with other human beings. And so I think, again, the bottom line question here is, do we have an education system that can best produce Minnesotans that can engage powerfully with that reality, because it'll determine, you know, whether we're going to be a prosperous state or not. And so can we do that by having a purely local control-directed decision-making process related to standards, or one where there's a statewide community process? I mean, I do struggle with those, and as Minnesotans who, you know, care about local control, we properly do struggle with those issues. So I am really hesitant to, you know, to embrace your bill, but I think it raises some really important questions for us. We have to get the answer to that question correct, which is the process for developing our standards, which is going to best optimize our opportunity to match up, to have our students match up with the emerging economy of, that we are going to either have to succeed in or you know, become a backwater state. I do want to say very quickly that Ms. Ephraim did raise a question about costs, and I think that's another issue that we do need to constantly be thinking about. To what degree does any of our standard development, whether it's done at the local level or statewide level, incurs, you know, huge costs? And that's been a concern for me. You know, we spend a heck of a lot of money in this state on assessments, I don't begrudge spending money on it. I just think that some of it hasn't been wisely spent. We spent them on assessments that, frankly, I don't think have served any purpose. I'm wondering if maybe Ms. Larson can answer a really quick question here, because the Common Core was raised here. And so I'm wondering if the language in the bill that says must revise and align to state's academic standards, would those apply to the common adopting the Common Core? Are Common Core thought of as state academic standards, or is that a different animal in terms of a different species of standards?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, if I understood your question, is Minnesota, by adopting the Common Core standards, adopting national standards or state standards? If we make the Common Core standards our own, they become the state standards.
That's correct.
Okay, Representative Kath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a teacher of social studies, and this fall, we have been speaking about this quite at length for the last year and a half. We actually convened all of the big nine schools in southern Minnesota to actually talk about this and address how we're going to implement these within our schools, because it is on a timeline, and we want to make sure this happens. And in Representative Erickson, I did not hear the concerns. Actually, the overjoyous comments that I heard from my fellow colleagues in social studies was first and foremost that this committee actually tackled a very grueling task, and that was to figure out how many standards should be placed in front of an instructor within a core subject. And that was a very difficult task for them to try and take on, and that is how many should we be putting before somebody and expecting them to teach within a semester, within a year-long course, within a quarter course, whatever it might be. And they really were able to come up with some commonalities there that we saw some of the shrinking of these standards. And within the shrinking of that, it did go away from some of just the knowledge-based concepts to exactly what we want our teachers to do, and that is to start implementing inquiry-based learning within our schools. And that inquiry-based says it's about process, that we can put down, and if I want to put down one fact in social studies, I could put down 500, and I could find another 500 people that want to add another 100. But guess what? By placing a process in there of understanding the impacts of the Great Depression on the United States, on Minnesota, and on your local community, wow, the number of facts that can be brought in there, but the fact that every student will understand that process, and that's really where inquiry-based learning is at and what we want to be doing for our kids through differentiation. And as a teacher of AP Economics and Political Science, I can hold that same standard not only for my AP students, but for my general ed and my modified courses that I teach as well. And I think that's what's exciting about where we're heading with these standards, is that we are implementing this in an inquiry-based approach. And so I guess I would caution us on that. A lot of the teachers I've been talking to is this concept of what we call enduring understandings. And that is where we can bam some of these into some very large concepts that are the most critical for us to try and tackle and to grasp as a school district. And that is a pathway that a lot of us as teachers are moving on and really excited to be doing. And so I would caution us to say that we want more of these knowledge-based or little factual factoids within our state standards, because the process is where it's at. These kids are strapped every day with laptops, iPads, iPhones. They have access to facts quicker than we could possibly imagine. But what they're lacking is process. Well, I found it on the internet, Mr. Kath. I want them to really understand, well, how does that impact you? What does that process look like? And how do we understand what those facts mean for us today? So I would say we're in the right direction. And to tell you the truth, we haven't politicized this process. And I think that's why most of my social studies teachers who come from both sides of the aisle are telling me, you know what? I like this. We haven't politicized it. We haven't made it into a campaign brochure. This is actually about kids learning, and that excites me a lot. And I think overall, the biggest thing that I hear from my teachers is that they want local control through banding. And actually, if there's one complaint, and Ms. Downey, I guess I don't have to send it to you, I can just say it right now, is that they're very concerned about the junior high standards not being banded, that they are very grade specific, and they would like to have some flexibility in the middle school about banding those middle school. Because what that does is it allows for different schools that might have a 5-6 building or a 7-8 building or a 5-8 building or whatever it might be to be able to have the flexibility to be able to teach the standards in the grade that they know works for their building. So that's what I'm hearing. I'm excited about implementing these in my own classroom, and I hope that we don't meddle with it too much.
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that?
Yeah.
Thank you,
please,
Mr. Chair. And Representative Kath, I appreciate your comments.
the reason that these aren't banded is we put in law, apparently a few years ago, that they had to be grade specific. So that's what Ms. Ani and her staff did in preparing these. And so we are the ones who made the mistake probably of not providing that, which I think is very important at the middle school level as well, because they're either 5, 6, 7, 8, or they're 6, 7, 8, and they need flexibility. So we have to take responsibility for that, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair Erickson. And no other questions, so I'm going to take the final word and just say that Representative Cab, I thought that was a pretty good description of what's going on with these standards, and I think that is an example of why legislative oversight would be important, is so that that all gets fleshed out, and some of the banding things that Chair Erickson just brought up, I think, means that legislative oversight would be a good part of this process. And I'm also struck by the fact that as we continue to talk about these things like standards that would fit on a statewide level, this one-size-fits-all notion kind of leads me back to expanding school choice, that I don't think we do have a one-size-fits-all, and that it's one of the areas where some parents are going to have a difference of opinion on what they want their kids or how they want their kids to learn. Chair Erickson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to reiterate, making sure that our children have knowledge and skills is always going to be so important. The inquiry cannot occur unless we have knowledgeable teachers and knowledgeable students. And I think that's where I see a weakness in our youth today, is they have lots of opinions, but they're not sure what those opinions are based on. And so, again, maybe I'm too traditional, but I still believe in knowledge and skills as the basic level. And so that, with that said, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that Senate File 1656 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Chair Erickson renews her motion that Senate File 1656 be recommended for passage and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion passes. And we, we're in adjournment until...
Mr. Chair, maybe I should comment. Thursday
please,
is a Charles. Very full schedule. We have bills being added. You've probably noticed that we posted the agenda. But we have bills coming to us constantly. We're hoping the Senate moves some of those so we can deal with those, unfortunately, that next week. That's what will happen, I fear. And so I need to prepare you for that. So Thursday, I believe we're going to have a longer session on floor, which means that unless we want to meet Friday, we'll come back hopefully to this room and finish our schedule. So as you study the proposals, please be ready with very specific questions so that we either move or defeat the provisions. I do want to tell you that the CPR provision will come back up Thursday. Laid it over for possible inclusion in a possible other bill. There will not be another bill. There will be no omnibus bill coming out of this committee. So I want us to take up the CPR provision and either vote it up or down and send it to the floor from there. So I've talked to both Chair Greiling and Chair Mariani, who agreed with me that we should move it and not just leave it lying here to die. And that will be the first thing we deal with Thursday. So think about how you want to deal with that mandate. I have asked the players in that proposal to please find a mandate that we could take away to replace with the CPR or to consider community education. But we probably won't deal with those finite issues on Thursday. We'll move it to the floor and let them continue to work both with the Senate and with us to determine whether we can send it forward off the floor or if we have to massage it along the way. So be ready for a tough schedule Thursday after we get that dealt with and for at least one meeting in the next week. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We're adjourned until Thursday.